Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a presentation on Krishna Sandarbha. Previously we had three Sandarbhas. Tattva Sandarbha was discussing the means of proof or pramana, and the conclusion was that Bhagavatam is the conclusive scripture and we can get all the knowledge of the Vedas from the Bhagavatam. And then there's a discussion of sambandha. That means ultimately that the supreme entity is Supreme Lord Bhagavan, but he's discussed in different ways. So Paramatma Sandarbha was there to present how the Lord relates to the material world, how he creates it and maintains it and witnesses it, and how Paramatma is the origin of the jiva. And Bhagavat Sandarbha discussed how the Lord manifests pastimes to give joy to the devotees. So he's not interested in material creation, he's interested in relationship with the devotees. So in summary, we got the Paramatma manifestation, manifests the jivas and creates the universe. And of course we have Brahman aspect, but there is nothing manifest in Brahman, so there's not much discussion about that. And now this Sandarbha talks particularly about Krishna and what makes him outstanding among all the different forms. So the different forms of Bhagavan, as I said, are relationships with devotees, so there is some sweetness there. But there's also a great show of powers of the Lord in relation to the devotee. So there's basically Aishwarya and Dasya Rasa in those relationships. On the other hand, with Krishna, we find a much superior type of sweetness and intimacy. He has all powers that all the other forms have, but he has a special quality of being very, very intimate and sweet. So that's what makes Krishna so special among all the different forms. So, as I said, Brahman is a manifestation of the Lord, but no Shaktis are manifest. So not too much interest, and because he has no qualities or form or activities, we can't really discuss too much about him. Paramatma is a form of Bhagavan who manifests certain powers in a form and qualities in relation to material world, creating the material world, maintaining it, and destroying it. And in the process of doing that, he also manifests all the jivas. So these are the functions of Paramatma. Bhagavan is absorbed in activities with his devotees, and there's exchanges between the devotee and the Lord. Bhagavan was analyzed as he who supports and maintains the devotee, he who bestows things upon the devotees, such as spiritual world, spiritual form, etc., prema, and va, he's always thinking of the devotees, Bhagavan. So there's a nice relationship between the Lord and his devotees. So this is further discussed in this Sandarbha with the added quality that this Bhagavan form is Krishna. The Bhagavan forms are various, and they have different relationships with different types of devotees. Paramatma form is relating to material world and witnessing the activities of the jivas in the material world. Okay. So these are of course all one. In the Bhagavatam it is said the Lord is Advaya Gyanam, which literally means non-dual knowledge. So we can't separate them actually and say that Bhagavan is different from Paramatma, is different from Bhagavan. Brahman, they're all the same, they're all one entity. But we make this distinction based upon the function and the amounts of qualities that manifest in these different aspects of the Supreme Lord. Additionally, in the second canto, 10th chapter, in discussing the topics of the Supreme Lord, the 10 topics, these were all related to Bhagavan. We have 10 topics, and in the center is Asraya, and all the 9 topics are around him. So, Bhagavan, from whom arise creation, subcreation, protection, mercy, karma, dharma, the kings, appearance of the avatars, destruction, liberation, is also called Paramatma and Brahman. So the Asraya is Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, but basically we're interested in the Bhagavan aspect. After this Sandarbha, then we have one Sandarbha to explain the Abhideya. We have these three things: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So three Sandarbhas are about the Sambandha: Paramatma, Bhagavat Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha. Then we have another Sandarbha called Bhakti Sandarbha. It's also discussions Bhakti Yoga. That's Abhideya. How we worship Krishna in order to get the Prayojana, which is Prema. So the last Sandarbha discusses Prema and its various forms. It's called the Priti Sandarbha. This is quite similar to the later part of the Nectar of Devotion, which describes the different rasas. So, in these Sandarbhas, therefore, we get a very systematic explanation of Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. And the Sambandha is divided into these three parts: Paramatma, Bhagavan, and then Krishna. So, and the three things are necessary. All three factors of knowledge are necessary in order to attain the goal. And as I said, Krishna is the Asraya of the Bhagavatam. That's the main element, and all the other 9 topics are related to Krishna, who is the ultimate Asraya. So creation and destruction, those are Paramatma functions. The other ones that are discussed in the Bhagavatam, like potion, etc., are aspects of Bhagavan. So, there are many forms of Bhagavan, and they often appear within this material world, and they remain Bhagavan. They are not in any way contaminated. So they are called avatars, which means descending forms. They descend into the material world from the spiritual realm without becoming material. It is said that they usually expand from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is a Paramatma form. So we have Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Karnodakshaya Vishnu. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is the form who first appears in the shell of the universe and produces Brahma from himself. So it is said that all the avatars are manifested through Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Which is expressed in that verse in the Bhagavatam, Eti Chamsakala Pungsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. So it talks about the amsas and the kalas, portions and parts of portions. And it says pumsa, so that means of the Purusha avatar. So the Purusha avatar, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, manifests his portions as various avatars, like the Kumaras, Varaha, Narada, etc. So we have various types of avatars. The lowest types are not actually Supreme Lord. They're not Bhagavan. They are Jivas. But they're still classed as avatars because they get a bestowal of power by Bhagavan, which is very special and eternally manifest in them. Avesh avatars. So we have the Kumaras. They have the endowment of Jnana. We have Narada Muni. He's endowed with Bhakti. And we have Prithu, Parsaram, Rishabha, Yajna, Shesha. They have Kriya Shakti. They have different activities they do. So Prithu has got the power to level the earth. Parsaram has the power to chop down the wicked Kshatriyas. Rishabhadev has the power of renunciation. Yajna does sacrifices. Shesha holds up the Bhumandala. So these are Aveshavatar, jivas with special powers. And Rupa Goswami describes in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, they have eternal forms. So it's not that people become these forms. They are these forms eternally. So no one becomes a Narada Muni or a Prithu or a Parsaram. They're always, they have these spiritual bodies at all times. And they also exist in the spiritual world. So we have the Lord. He does not appear in Kali Yuga directly. He is called Tri-Yuga. Though we do have a Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga also, he cannot appear in his full form. So therefore, generally he is Avesh form. That way he's a jiva. He's not the full Supreme Lord because he's supposed to be Tri-Yuga. So the Kali Yuga, Yuga avatar is a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord. Except in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who comes after Krishna once in the day of Brahma. So he's the exceptional case. So, we have some jivas who have special powers, but they're not permanent powers, like the Shaktivesh avatars. They're given powers temporarily, little powers. They call vibhutis of the Lord. So these are listed in the Bhagavatam itself in the first canto. So the great sages, the rishis, are called the vibhutis of the Lord. The manus and their descendants are called vibhutis, devatas, like Indra. Brahma's sons, we have all these different sons like Kratu and Marichi, etc. They're considered to be, instead of the Prajapatis, they are also considered to be vibhutis of the Lord. So if they manifest greater Shakti and they actually have eternal bodies, then they're called Avesha forms. We know that these devatas, for instance, have material bodies, manus have material bodies, sages have material bodies, and every 71 yuga cycles, all their positions change and a new person takes their place. So they're temporary manifestations only. We also have in Vaivasvata Manvantara some more Avesha avatars that appear. We had, Kumaras and Narada Muni and Parsaram and Prithu and Shesha and Yajna. And in Vaivasvata Manvantara, we get the appearance of Buddha. He is also Avesha. According to some, he comes every Kali Yuga. But he's a Vesha form also, because in Kali Yuga you cannot have full forms. And even Kalki is considered to be an Avesha form because, again, he comes in Kali Yuga. Some people say he comes every Kali Yuga. In any case, they're Avesha forms. Jivas. Okay, so then we have the actual avatars are also called Amsa avatars, not vibhutis, not jivas, and not Shaktivesh avatars, but actually the Supreme Lord. But they have a very limited amount of Shakti or powers and qualities, so that's called Amsa, portion of powers. So we got some called Vaibhava forms, like Varaha and Hayagriva, and we got Prabhava, that's other forms that manifest less powers. We can also divide the avatars according to their functions. We have Purusha avatars. That's the Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Purusha avatars. We have the Guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. We have the Lila avatars, Manvantara avatars, and the Yuga avatars. Some of these Manvantara avatars, Manvantara avatar is an avatar of the Supreme Lord who presides over a whole 71 yuga cycles of Manu and his descendants. One form. So we, in our present Vaivasvata Manvantara period, it is Vamanadeva. He stays throughout this whole period. So some of them are also quite powerful, and they are also Lila avatars. So we have Hari, Vaikuntha, and Vamanadeva. They are Vaibhava forms. Other forms got less powers, they're called Prabhava forms. So we have Vibhu, Satyasena, Ajita, Sarvabhauma, Rishabha, Vishwiksena, Dharmaseta, Sudama, Yogeshwar, and Brihadbhanu. And we even have a Shaktivesh avatar, Yajna. He's also Shaktivesh avatar. So we have very powerful forms of the Lord. They are called Purna or Parvasta forms, and at the top we have Nrsimha, Rama, and top is Krishna. So this, they're ranked according to the amounts of qualities and powers that they show. And Krishna's at the very top. So, Krishna comes as avatar. He appears within the material world, but he doesn't come through the Purusha avatars. He is directly Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, and no one can compete with him, so he doesn't appear through anybody. He has special power, such that if he kills a demon, they get liberation. The other forms of the Lord don't do that. So we see how Shishupal got his head cut off by the chakra of Krishna, and then he went to the spiritual world. So, in the first canto, we have this very famous verse, Ete chamsakala pungsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam indrari vakyulam lokam radiyanti yuge yuge. All avatars mentioned and not mentioned here who are portions of the Purusha or are empowered jivas create happiness in the world whenever it is afflicted by demons and their ideas. But Krishna is the ultimate form of Bhagavan. Krishna's tu, Bhagavan Swayam. So this verse, is, particularly this Krishna's tu, Bhagavan Swayam, that is considered to be the theme of the whole Bhagavatam. So it's called the Paribhasa Sutra. A sutra is a short selection of words to express a concept very concisely. So here, the concept presented is Krishna is the ultimate form of the Lord. So that's the theme of the whole Bhagavatam, and everything in the Bhagavatam must relate to this theme. It is understood as the principle behind all the other statements of the Bhagavatam. So if we hear stories of glorification of other forms of the Lord, then we relate that to this, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is supreme. So if we have the story of Nrsimhadeva and all of his wonderful activities, but Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. Here are the activities of Vamana, how he spread throughout the universe with his three legs and gave mercy to Bali Maharaj. Still, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is superior. So everything we have to relate to this phrase. So the definition of a Paribhasa Sutra is the short phrase, a sutra, is mentioned once in the text. It's not repeated, but it harmonizes all the statements together. They get meaning because of this statement. So, therefore, we should relate everything that we hear and study in the Bhagavatam to this statement. Sometimes we have very contrary statements that may be a little confusing for some people because they looks as if Krishna is not supreme. So what do? We have to go back to the statement. This is the theme. Therefore, every other story has to be explained in terms of Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And we cannot say that anything, some stories will contradict that. No. Somehow we have to explain the other story to indicate that Krishna's Supreme Lord. So, in the 10th canto, we have the story of how Krishna and Arjuna went to meet Mahavishnu. And there, if we take one meaning of the words, then Vishnu welcomes, oh, how are you? Very fine. I've been wanting to meet you, etc., etc. And then he says, okay, now after I've met you, you can go back to your places and whatever like that, continue your activities. And in the whole conversation, it appears that Krishna is an expansion of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is more powerful. But that would contradict this statement, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. How can that be? So therefore we have to interpret the whole story in another way so that those words that look like as if Krishna is an expansion of Vishnu, that is not actually true. So that's a way in which we have to adjust these stories. Another example is the disappearance of the Yadus. We have chapters dedicated to describing how the Yadus all went off to Prabhasa Kshetra, and then they drank some liquor, then they got drunk, and they started fighting each other, and they killed each other with sticks, and they even attacked Krishna. So it sounds very strange. How can Krishna be Bhagavan or whatever like that if he's, you know, he's getting attacked? And then there's a story, there's a whole detail of how Krishna himself gets shot in the foot and he disappears. It looks strange. We have to explain it in terms of Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Somehow Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. So therefore these are appearances. These stories, this is a story of appearances, but it's not actually true. Just a way for the Lord to disappear. And so no way minimizes the greatness of Krishna. So that's how we have to understand it. There's another statement. There's a little bit of a statement of this in the Bhagavatam itself and also in the Mahabharata. Vishnu took two hairs, one white and one black. These two hairs entered the wombs of Rohini and Devaki in the Yadu family. The white hair became Balaram and the black hair became Krishna. So then it looks like Krishna is an expansion from Vishnu. His two hairs entered into the wombs of the Devaki and Rohini and they became Krishna and Balaram. So it looks as if Krishna is secondary to Vishnu. And probably some people in India will quote this thing and say, okay, why do we have to worship Krishna? Let's worship Vishnu because Krishna is a manifestation or expansion of Vishnu. And they can quote something like this. So we should not be confused by this again. We're taking Bhagavatam as the pramana, ultimate pramana. And this statement here is how we relate everything to. All the stories have to relate to Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. So therefore that story also about the two hairs cannot actually be truthful because Krishna is the source of Vishnu, it's not the other way around. So actually our acharyas, they go into whole detail of explaining the verse and by that then the meaning is different. It's not just there are two hairs there. Here's the rest of the statement. Since I live on Svetadipa on the milk ocean as the Purusha form named Aniruddha, the forms Vasudeva and Shankarshan will personally appear in this world. they are worthy of placing on my head in respect like two hairs, or being placed on my head in respect like two hairs. They will easily remove the burden of the earth. So again, it looks as if it's they are expansions from Vishnu. While in trance, Brahma heard words vibrating in the sky. Thus he told the devatas, O devatas, hear immediately from me the order of the Purusha and execute it without delay. So therefore, it looks as if the Purusha's going to expand as Krishna there also. So all of these statements which look contradictory, we have to relate that to the Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam statement. So in the 10th and 11th cantos particularly, we got many stories about Krishna. The previous cantos have discussed about different avatar forms, and then the 10th and 11th canto, they're talking about Krishna and his pastimes. On the other hand, throughout each canto, we'll find discussion of Krishna, mention of Krishna. Speakers refer to Krishna, and each canto gives some description of Krishna also. So in other words, Krishna is the thread through all of the cantos of the Bhagavatam, not just the 10th and 11th, but the others as well. So it's the major theme. In the first canto, Narada Muni taught Vedavyas a mantra about Krishna so that he could manifest the Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Tuvyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradumnanaya Anirudaya Nama Shankarshanaya Cha. I offer my obeisances to you, Bhagavan Krishna. Let me respect Vasudeva Pradumna Aniruddha and Shankarshan in our mind. So, he emphasizes Krishna there. And Chatrasloki is given to Brahma. Usually we think it is Vishnu, but our acharyas also say, no, it's actually Krishna who is giving the Chatrasloki, because Krishna is the theme of the whole Bhagavatam. So in the Gopaltapani Upanishad, this statement is found. When I pass the first half of my day in meditating and praising after the end of the Parardha, the Supreme Lord awoke in my presence. He appeared before me wearing the dress of a cowherd. So Krishna appeared before Brahma and gave him instructions. And in the Bhagavatam we have this description. Previously at the beginning of creation, I spoke to Brahma sitting on his lotus in the lake of my navel, the highest knowledge which reveals my pastimes, which the devotees call as the four essential verses of Bhagavatam. Okay. So from the Gopaltapani we understand actually it's Krishna who's speaking. So in the first canto we have this statement also. Krishna sva damo pagate dharma gyana dibisaha kalo nastadrasamesha pranarko dunodidha. Though Krishna left Dwarka, arriving at Prabhas, and then disappeared along with his six great qualities, this Purana, another form of the sun, has now arisen in Kali Yuga for those who have lost their knowledge. So here it says that Bhagavatam and Krishna are non-different. It's no one else, it's Krishna. No other form of the Lord. It's not Vishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu anymore. It's Krishna who is the Bhagavatam. So he's the main theme. And therefore all these stories that appear to be contradictory, we have to explain them in such a way that it's a glorification of Krishna. So the supreme name is Krishna's name. Since Krishna is supreme among all beings, his names and other features are also greater than all others. Thus they are also the perfection of all things. So Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. That's a lot of words, But then the supreme name is simply Krishna's name. It's also, everything is Krishna. In other words, the Bhagavatam is Krishna, the name is Krishna, and throughout the Bhagavatam, it's all Krishna. Saying the name of Krishna once gives the result of repeating Vishnu's thousand names three times. This is from the Brahmanda Purana. So in this way, Krishna is the principal name. So one attains liberation from Rama's name, and one attains prema by Krishna's name. So though Rama's name is powerful, Krishna's name is more powerful. Why? Because Krishna's Bhagavan Swayam. He is the core form of the Lord, the most important form. Oh. So, and then Bhagavad Gita, then we have similar verses emphasizing Krishna. Manmada Bhava. Concentrate your mind on me, that means on Krishna. Manmana. Be my devotee, Madbhakta, that means Krishna's devotee. Madhyaji, do sacrifices for me or worship me. Mam Namaskuru, offer your respects to me, to Krishna. Mam Evaisasi, Satyam Te Pratijana Prayosi Me, and you will come to me alone. So all these mams, and mat, man, mat, mud, mom, emphasize that Krishna is supreme. Now, so Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita are both emphasizing Krishna. So therefore all these stories have to relate to that, and if it looks contradictory, we have to see what the real meaning is. To help us, we have the explanations given by our acharyas, which will explain how Krishna is the underlying theme. And the Bhagavad Gita also, Sarva Dharman Paityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Surrender only to me alone, only to Krishna. So, people will say, oh, you're all fanatical saying only Krishna. Worship only Krishna, but it's not fanatical, it's what Krishna is saying. Surrender only to me, nobody else. So the hypothetical question that produces this verse in the Bhagavad Gita is, how should I concentrate on you since I'm overcome with many obstacles? My mind is all distracted. And Krishna answers, give up all dharmas, sarva dharman, including the daily practices, the nitya kriyas, completely at their very root, parityaja, completely give up, since sinner obstacles will not arise. Since you give them up on my order, surrender only to me. So, mam ekam, that means only to me, only to Krishna. Of course, we have this famous verse, Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam, Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva, Karmanyekam Devaki Putra Seva, Mantropyeko Devaki Putra Nama. There's only one scripture, Bhagavad Gita, Devaki Putra Gitam, the Gita spoken by son of Devaki. Eko Devo, one Supreme Lord. Who is he? Devaki Putra Eva, son of Devaki Krishna. Karma Api Ekam, there's only one activity. Devaki Putra Seva, serve Krishna. Mantra Api Eko, there's only one mantra. Devaki Putra Nama, the name of Krishna. That is the mantra. So again, emphasis is upon Krishna. One scripture, Bhagavad Gita, one Lord, Krishna alone, one action, serving Krishna, one mantra, the name of Krishna. This is from the Gita Mahamya. Okay. So previously I mentioned that there were these different terms used to indicate or to explain sentences or sections of the Bhagavatam, how they function in relation to the whole. Some sentences function as upakrama or introduction. So within the Bhagavatam, all of these things should actually center around Krishna as tu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the highest form of the Lord. So therefore, in the first verse of Bhagavatam, we have Dhamna Svena Nirastakuvakam Satyam Param Dhimahi. I meditate on Krishna, who destroys Maya by his Sarup Shakti in the form of his Dhamma. There's a meditation upon Satyam Param, the highest truth. So that is Krishna, Bhagavan Swayam. The end or conclusion should repeat the upakrama, the introduction. Should be a similar statement. So in the 12th canto, which is the end of the Bhagavatam, then we have tat shudam vimulam vishokam amartam satyam param dhimahi. Same satyam param dhimahi is there. I meditate upon that pure, spotless Krishna, who is free from suffering and death, and who previously revealed this incomparable lamp of knowledge to Brahma. So the introduction, introductory statement, and the closing statement are both about Krishna again. So now this shows how Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam is the main theme of the whole Bhagavatam. Okay. So, when people hear about Krishna, they may think of him as a human being because he performs activities that look very humanish, and his activities are such that he often puts himself in a very low position, like getting tied up by ropes of Mother Yasoda, etc. But we have to understand that though he appears like that, to show sweetness in his relationship with his devotees, he is always perfect and eternal. So his form is always eternal. He's not got a material form. He's not a human being like the people of this material world. So this is stated many places in the Bhagavatam. What worship must the gopis have performed? With their eyes, they always drink the nectar of Krishna's form, which is the essence of loveliness, and is not to be equaled or surpassed. The loveliness is the only abode of beauty, fame, and opulence. It is self-perfect, or ananya siddha, ever fresh and extremely rare. So ananya siddha means it is fully perfect with no other factor. No, it's not that he was made perfect by anybody. He's automatically perfect in his own right. So in other words, he's eternally got all perfections. The abode of Krishna is eternal. That abode, of course, appears within the material world by the Lord's Shakti, but it's actually non-different from the spiritual world. So Goloka is the aspect of the Dhamma in the spiritual world, and then we have Vrindavan within this material world. So they're actually equal, and they're both fully spiritual and without destruction. They may have a few differences. For instance, in the spiritual world, we don't have a birth of Krishna like we have in Krishna getting born in the material world. The differences are, let's say, minor. And this is all created by the Leela Shakti of the Lord. The two realms remain a little bit separate, even though they're one. So the associates of the Lord are also eternal. Understand that my Mathura is eternal, and so is Vrindavan, so are Jamuna and the gopis and cowherd boys. My avatar is eternal. One should not doubt this from the Padma Purana. So all the associates in the spiritual world are eternal. Okay. So we have the story in the Bhagavatam of Jai and Vijay. And Jai and Vijay seem to fall into the material world. The Lord spoke to his two associates, go to the material world, do not be afraid, you will have good fortune, but also do not go to that world. Though I can nullify the curse of the Brahmana, I do not desire to go against my rules. So what the Lord is saying here, you go to the material world, but simultaneously, you also stay here in Vaikuntha. So in other words, they really didn't fall. An expanded form went into the material world and played the role of Hiranyakasipu, etc., and Hiranyaksha, etc. So the Lord kept them in the spiritual world also. So this way they remain eternal associates of the Lord. By the will of the Lord, which makes the impossible possible, they took three births in material bodies made of the gunas for his actions like fighting and playing in order to attract the minds of his devotees, though they had possessed spiritual bodies with all siddhis. So those spiritual bodies are eternal, so we shouldn't think that they lost their bodies or something. Huh? Though the associates are eternal in this world and in the spiritual world, it is stated they become wounded by weapons, get poisoned, drink, faint, desire to know the truth and get liberated from samsara. These acts of the associates assist the human pastimes, as in the case of the Lord himself acting as a human. So sometimes the Lord appears to be a material being. We see in Bhagavatam, one of the battles, and then a demon showed a false form of his father, Krishna's father getting, he had killed his father, he's holding up the head, saying, I killed your father, and then Krishna starts lamenting. Actually, how can he lament? Because he knows everything already, he knows it's a trick, and also he's not attached to anything, you know, at all. But it looks as if he's a human being. So, like that, the devotees also, they are eternal, always fixed in the relationship with the Lord, but they may appear to be overcome by circumstances in the material world. For instance, the Pandavas get exiled to the forest and they're lamenting in the forest, etc. So we shouldn't take these in a negative way and say that they're material beings because they act in ways that look very material. So it's all arrangement of the Lord and his Shakti for pastimes. We see in the disappearance of Krishna, then the Yadus act in a rather strange way. The contrary conduct of the Yadus described at the end of the 11th canto is Maya, similar to the bewilderment which overcame Arjuna. Their speech, insulting the sages, was arranged by the Lord in order to announce that the curse of a Brahmana should not be counteracted. So the young members of the Yadu dynasty dressed up one of their members as if she were a pregnant woman and tried to fool the sages, and the sages understood and they got angry and they cursed them. So this, we shouldn't criticize the young Yadus for that. Again, it's something created by the Lord, just as Arjuna fell into illusion at the battle of Kurukshetra and threw down his bow and arrow, even though he's an Nityasiddha associate of the Lord. How can he fall into Maya? Arrangement of the Lord. And then the Yadavas began to fight with each other. How could they fight with each other? How could they fight with Krishna and Balaram also? Again, Shakti of the Lord. Krishna got shot by an arrow, and then he appeared to die. So again, it's an appearance only. It's an arrangement of the Lord. So when Vijay went into the material world, and they became, it looked like they were demons, and they fought against the Lord, they hated the Lord. Then finally they return to the spiritual world again. So all of these pastimes as playing the role of demons in the material world is also an arrangement of the Supreme Lord. It does not interfere with the eternal status of those devotees, Jaya and Vijaya. And we shouldn't criticize them for that. So one may ask, why does Krishna not have other persons similar to his associates appear in the material world along with him and stay there for some time to give mercy to the mortals along with them? In other words, why doesn't he simply expand other persons and stays in the spiritual world and have other people come into the material world? So the Lord is attached to his devotees in the spiritual world, so he wants to bring them also. He can't separate himself from those devotees. So Krishna exists with the cowherd boys in the spiritual world. He has to bring those cowherd boys into the material world because he's very attached to them. Just as Lakshman, Bharata, and Shankarshan take birth with the Lord, the Yadavas, descending from their spiritual planet by the Lord's will, take birth with the appearance of Lord Krishna and then return to his eternal Dhamma along with them. The birth of these devotees is not caused by the bondage of karma. So the Lord takes a birth, it is not a real birth, it's not by karma. Devotees also appear to take birth in the material world, like the Yadavas and others. Not, again, not karma. Arrangement of the Supreme Lord. Okay. So in other words, the devotees are eternal, just like the Lord. We have this story in the Bhagavatam of Nanda and Yasoda, and this is a description of how previously they were Drona and Dara, and then they worshipped the Lord, and then by the power of that worship, they became Yasoda and Nanda. So it looks like they weren't eternal. They did sadhana in the material world. They were material beings. So the explanation of this is that Nanda and Yasoda are eternal. Drona and Dara were amsas of them, or expansions of them in the material world, and they performed sadhana, and then they merged back into Nanda and Yasoda when Nanda and Yasoda appeared on earth. So there's no contradiction there. So Nanda and Yasoda remain eternal. Yeah, so they are eternally the associates of the Lord. Okay, so when the Lord comes into the material world, we call this the prakata pastimes. The aprakata pastimes, which means non-manifest pastimes, take place eternally. And there's no mixture of material world or material objects. In this way, when the Lord comes to the material world, we see him fighting with various materialistic demons and killing them, etc. So in the uppercut pastimes, we won't see that. There's no entry of anything material there. It looks like time exists, but actually it goes on eternally. So the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan go on eternally, day after day after day. So it looks like there is a type of time, but it's much different from material time. So when the Lord has the prakata pastimes in the material world, they are also not touched by time, but they may have an appearance like that because Krishna gets born, etc. So we have his birth pastime, etc. But actually, the Lord is eternal, and his pastimes are also, that he shows in the material world, are part of his prakata lila. In the aprakata manifestation of Krishna situated in a special manifestation of Vrindavan at the moment, the associates manifested in the aprakata manifestation experience union with Krishna in the Prakat manifestation, it associates experience separation when he goes to Mathura, though he was previously in Raja. So the Prakata pastimes are a little different. Krishna goes out of Vrindavan, goes to Mathura, then goes to Dwarka. Aprakat pastime, which are also taking place simultaneously in Vrindavan, and there's no separation. Krishna stays in Vrindavan. So we have the two pastimes overlapping more or less. So we may ask, how can he have two pastimes simultaneously operating, one in separation and one in union, with the same devotees? The people of Vrindavan are both in separation in one set of pastimes, and they're in union with Krishna in another set of pastimes, simultaneously in the same place. How is it possible? Achintya power of Krishna. So. The abode has, we have the Prakata abode and we have the Aprakata abode. If you're in one of the abodes, you're not aware of what's happening in the other abode, even though you may be present in both. So we have all the associates of the Lord in Aprakat pastimes. They're not aware of the pastimes that are taking place in the Prakat pastime. So if there's separation in one pastime, they're not aware that actually they're also in the Aprakat pastimes with no separation. So the devotees are unaware of certain things in the two different pastimes in the different abodes. Krishna leaves Vrindavan, he goes to Mathura, then he goes to Dwarka. Sometimes he goes out of Dwarka and he goes other places for travel sometimes. Of course, if he goes to Hastinapur or to meet the Pandavas, but he also goes to a few other places outside the Dham. What happens? It's also spiritual. Those places also become spiritual by the Shakti of the Lord. So he never enters the material world, actually, even if it looks like he's going out of Vrindavan or going out of Dwarka. That place also becomes a spiritual world. So Krishna leaves, he winds up his material pastimes, the Prakata pastimes. How does he do that? So here, Krishna went to Mathura and fought with Dantavakra, who had come there and was waiting for Krishna. And finally, Krishna killed him with his club. Then he went to Vrindavan. Or actually, it wasn't Vrindavan because they had moved out of Vrindavan, but close by there. He crossed the Jamuna, went to Raja, and greeted his original parents, Nanda and Yasoda, comforted them, and was embraced by them with tears in his throat. So he returned to Vrindavan ultimately after he'd gone to Dwarka. We don't hear about this in the Bhagavatam, but it is told in the Padma Purana that he went back. And our acharyas often quote this to show that Krishna keeps his promise, and he came back to Vrindavan eventually. After enjoying for 2 months in Prakata pastimes in Vraja, Krishna, understanding that they were afflicted with fear that he would leave again, made sure that that would not happen. He made the Prakata pastimes one with his eternal Aprakata pastimes. So they merged together, the pastimes, Aprakata and Prakata. So in other words, they all disappeared. They were in the Prakata pastimes, suddenly they disappeared and they entered into the Aprakata pastimes, which cannot be detected by persons external to the pastimes, and which are completely devoid of the obstacles mentioned above. It's a special manifestation of Vrindavan for the Aprakata pastimes. So after he did that, then he actually went back to Dwarka again and continued his Dwarka pastimes after that. Dasananda went to Vaikuntha with Krishna, Yasoda, and others in another manifestation of the state in Gokula, though they were not aware of this. In another manifestation, Krishna then returned to Dwarka. It was described that Krishna took them all to Vaikuntha, which means Aishwarya Goloka in the spiritual world. Simultaneously, they were in the uppercut pastimes in Vrindavan, and then Krishna also went back to Dwarka. So, all of this is there to show the variegated nature of Krishna and how he arranges his pastimes within this material world to give pleasure to his devotees. And he manifests his most excellence in Gokul, that is, in Vrindavan. He shows great powers there. So he's not only sweet, Krishna shows the greatest sweetness in Vrindavan, but he also shows the greatest powers in Vrindavan. For instance, he showed himself as the Lord of millions of universes, the single form of rasa composed of existence, knowledge, and bliss, when Brahma was bewildered and tried to steal the cowherd boys and calves. Krishna expanded himself and all the calves and cowherd boys. And when Brahma came back, he saw them all, and then suddenly he saw all Vishnu forms. Yeah? And then they all merged into Krishna. So there, then Brahma understood that Krishna is the source of all the Vishnu forms. So, Krishna is most powerful. He's also most compassionate. More compassionate than all the other forms of the Lord. So when he killed Putana, who was a demon, not only did he liberate her, he took her to the spiritual world and gave her a position of a mother as a nurse, even though she had tried to kill him. So we don't see that benediction given by any other form of the Lord. And he is full of the highest sweetness. Some of the other forms of the Lord have some sweetness, like Ramchandra, but Krishna has full sweetness. And thus he has all sorts of intimate pastimes with his devotees, which are incomparable. And his paraphernalia is also the greatest. His associates are the greatest. So in the Bhagavatam 10th canto, we have glorification of the people of Vrindavan and Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men. And they're constantly glorified as being the greatest devotees. With the gopis, he displays the Rasalila, the highest pastime possible, with the highest expression of bliss. Krishna, though naturally endowed with all powers, appeared most brilliant in the midst of the dancing gopis, like a sapphire in the midst of golden gems. So he showed highest manifestation of pastimes with the gopis. And then we have a special gopi. Anaya radito nutam bhagavan hrir ishvaraha yano vihaya govinda prito yam anayat raha. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful Lord who takes away distress, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. So we don't have a direct mention of Radha, but we get this indirect mention in the Bhagavatam. Krishna is the highest form of Bhagavan, and then his consort is this very special gopi, who is Radha. So Krishna has a Swarup Shakti, and that's manifested in the form of the gopis. That's the highest form of his Swarup Shakti. And because they have the highest type of prema. And why it's the highest? Because in the Swarup Shakti, of course, we do have Sandini, Sambit, and Hladini. Hladini is considered to be the superior part. And the gopis represent the highest aspect of Hladini. And then Radha, the highest aspect of Hladini. She's the personification of Hladini Shakti. In the Vedas, we also have mention of Radha and Krishna. Sometimes people will criticize, oh, the Vedas don't mention about Krishna, don't mention about Radha. But there are a few mentions there. It's very secret, but nevertheless we have a few mentions. So this is one from the Rig Parishishta: Radha shines with Krishna, Krishna shines with Radha among the people everywhere. In the first verse of the Bhagavatam, this is given many meanings, and what the final meaning is, that one of the meanings, the general meaning, that, you know, Krishna is supreme. Second meaning is, or the Bhagavan is supreme. Second meaning is Krishna, with his pastimes, he is supreme. And then it goes on to the, I think, the process of bhakti, and then finally Madhurya Rasa. Therefore, in that first verse itself, we'll also have reference to Radha and Krishna as the highest entities in that first verse. So the last line there is, Dhamna Svena Narastakua Kam Satyam Param Dimahi. Let us meditate on Radha and Krishna, the supreme couple, eternally fixed in their qualities, who destroy all obstacles to their pastimes by their influence. Yeah. What was it from? I think it was a Brahma. Was it? Oh, I didn't. Okay. Could be Padma Purana or Brahma Vaivarta Purana, perhaps. I think I can figure out where it is maybe later on. Okay. Anyway, we don't know where it is for now, but anyway. Here, that one. Oh, this is Vishnu's name, huh? Yeah, I don't know where it's from. I'll have to look it up. I think it also mentions this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also. Huh?
And so you're talking about the devotees who are like the avatars or empowered jivas who, like through eternal forms, that may come down and perform pastimes with Krishna. So I'm just thinking, like, Srila Prabhupada was, could we say that that was his leela, or that he was like a jiva who was empowered Krishna, but, you know, there was genuine struggle and, you know,
Well, as I said, Shaktivesh avatars have eternal bodies, and generally these are the ones that are listed, so they seem to be fixed forms. That just like the Guna avatars or the Leela avatars or the Manvantara avatars, etc., or Purusha avatars, they all seem to be fixed. So if we want to give them special powers, then we have to put them probably in the Vibhuti category.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little.
But so, was Prabhupada's activities?
Well, for the Vibhutis, they do have material bodies, so it's a little bit of a different thing. But because they are also empowered by the Lord, then we have to say that the Lord also is somewhat arranging everything for them. So we can't say it's all, they're just people in the material with regular karma or whatever. So the Lord is also making arrangements for them in some form or other.
And particularly in Hinduism, we heard about the Hindu Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. But is that Hindu, that Trinity, as far as I'm aware, is not mentioned in the Vedas anywhere?
Well, we'll find it in some Puranas.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that word used, Trinity, or like the equivalent in
Sanskrit? Well, I guess they call them Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Trimurti or something like that.
Trimurti.
Yeah. Three forms, you know. Oh, Trinity,
Christianity, the British coming to India.
Oh, okay.
Hinduism said, well, we've got a Trinity also. But whether they understand.
Well, maybe the Trinity word more or less borrowing, but the Trimurti is there, three forms. Yeah. So the people will often say they're all equal, but then we don't take that interpretation. Yeah. They are the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, but then they're not all equal because Brahma is usually a jiva. Shiva's not a jiva, but he shows manifestation of less powers, and then we have Vishnu, who is he, you know, Supreme Lord.
Thank you, Brahma. You mentioned in one of the slides about the devotees, all sages, monks, devatas, and half the humans.
Yeah, well, we'll see in the when it describes the Manvantara reign, then at the end of their thing, then a new Manu comes. And then they have a whole other set of devatas, sages, etc. You'll see in the bottom, there's a whole list of the sages, their names, who he becomes, this sage becomes this person becomes this devata, etc. So a list of sages and devatas, and they're all replaced with each new Manu, and every 71 yuga cycles. So it's like a post, more or less, and then different jivas take that role. And they become the next sage and the next devata.
There's one question
about the Narada it's not really mentioned, but he's not a Shaktivesh avatar, because Narada Muni is a Shaktivesh avatar, and he is not, so we could say he's a special jiva. Maybe he's a vibhuti or whatever, it doesn't really say, but probably a vibhuti. Okay. Hare Krishna.